So, Pete, what are we talking about today?
Today, I'm going to tell you the origin story of the most feared horror villain of all time.
Jason Voorhees?
Not that one.
Michael Myers?
Wrong again.
Freddy Krueger?
No, I'm talking about the most vile of predators, Harvey Weinstein. Welcome to Fearless Films. Fearless Films is a podcast where two horror movie buffs
That's
break down scary movies for the scaredy cats so they don't have to watch the movie.
And what are we
Well, today is our special April Fools episode, which is why
Oh,
we're releasing it on the wrong day. Because it's a trick, it's a prank.
we're so funny.
Unfortunately, there's only like one horror movie that's actually about April Fools, so I had to settle for a movie that's about a prank gone wrong, which creates a slasher villain, which I thought was fitting enough.
Sure, that works.
Yeah. And that movie would be 1981's American slasher film, The Burning.
Starring Weinstein?
No. This is the first movie ever created by Harvey Weinstein. Weinstein? Weinstein.
That makes more sense.
And if you go into it knowing that fact, a lot of this story is going to make a ton of sense.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. But now I'm worried.
Let me clarify by saying, top of this episode, trigger warnings across the board.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there it's going to get bad. It's going to get real bad. This movie, though it came out a year after Friday the 13th, was actually conceived and put into planning stages a few years beforehand. So technically, this is trying to ride the wave off of Halloween's success and would have been like the first big summer camp slasher if Friday the 13th hadn't beat it to production.
Got it.
Yeah. I had never seen it before, but I had heard of it for many years. It does have a bit of a cult following and is, I guess, pretty well known in horror circles. Although I don't know if I've ever talked to anyone about this movie in my entire life.
And
And
here you are.
yeah, to me, it kind of plays just like a way cheaper, less well-made Friday the 13th.
Great.
I was not impressed, but we'll talk about reactions and such at the end. But for now, we can discuss the movie itself, and prepare for a lot of bad, terrible sexual stuff.
Oh, okay.
Important to note, the director, Tony Milam, I had never heard of, mostly known for directing documentaries, such as White Rock, and also, I guess, directed Genesis in Concert in 1977, so that's pretty cool.
Cool.
The film stars a bunch of fucking people, a lot of now really famous actors. This was like their debut film, including Seinfeld's Jason Alexander, famous movie star Holly Hunter, TV and movie star Fisher Stevens. So yeah, like you watch this movie now and you're just like, holy shit, look at all those people who don't have lines but will be super famous in like 10 years. It comes in at a brisk 91 minutes long, and I was able to watch it on Tubi, which is quickly becoming my go-to source for horror movies.
We do like Tubi.
It's got a great library. And whoever, like, acquired it for Tubi did a really good job, because they, I guess, like, they got a hold of, like, the 4K, like, Blu-ray quality transfer of the film, because it looked crisp.
Fancy.
Looked real good.
Fancy.
Although, that kind of just made it, like, the picture was crystal clear, so I can see how fucking cheap these special effects are in this movie.
Are they special effects, or are they bad practical effects?
They are mundane effects.
Oh, good.
It's all just, you know, prosthetic limbs and skin getting pierced by fake giant garden shears and blood squirting out.
Lovely.
I mean, some of the gags are pretty well done. It's just, it looks really, like, there's, I'll give you a great comparison that'll work for you. There is a very similar shot to Friday the 13th where somebody gets impaled through the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that whole like fake skin neck prosthetic going. And this just looks 10 times worse than the one in Friday, which also doesn't look great.
Great. Cool. They tried, I guess. Hooray.
They tried. I mean, it's funny to me. I guess Cropsy, the villain. Oh, I guess I should mention that too. Where am I going? So the general idea of the film is it's based on the Cropsy legend, which is a real-life urchin legend from New York that, like, was a campfire tale about a serial killer, but it was actually kind of based on a real dude who murdered children and lived near the Willowbrook State School, which was a home for children with intellectual disabilities in the 70s and 80s, and it's a place where children were tortured and harmed and viciously abused.
Yeah.
So all this movie takes from that actual tale is there's a guy named Cropsy who kills people.
Okay, so we're not going into the school or anything at all. It's just the villain.
Yeah, just a dude named Cropsy.
That makes me feel better somehow.
But yeah, so like I was saying, Tom Savini, legendary special effects horror guy, did the Cropsy makeup in this movie. And I'm like, well, Tom, his makeup looks pretty good, but the rest of this movie, not so much.
Oh boy, okay.
All right, you ready to get into it?
Not really, but let's do it anyway.
Okay. So the movie opens on a summer camp at night, Camp Blackfoot, where a group of the campers are plotting to get revenge on the caretaker of the camp, a guy named Cropsy. For many reasons, they're like, they say he beat up one of their friends, they say he's generally just an asshole to all the kids, and so they're going to deliver his comeuppance.
Is that how they say it?
Or that's how I'm saying it.
Okay.
So their big elaborate plot is they sneak over to his cabin, they break in when he's asleep in his bed, and they take a worm and maggot riddled skull that the movie does not tell us how they acquired a human skull.
Good. Good.
They put like candles in the eye sockets and they place it on his bedside table and they light the candles, and then they run outside and they're all like huddled around the window and they start banging on it to make a noise and wake him up. So Cropsy wakes up, looks over, sees this skull with flames in its eyes and worms crawling all over it, freaks the fuck out, as you would expect, and in his panic, knocks the skull to the ground, and the entire cabin catches on fire in about 0.5 seconds.
Okay. Red flag number one, skulls at summer camps. Red flag number two, cabins are not fire retardant.
You should have seen this. Like, the skull hits the ground, and it, like, lands near the blankets of his bed, and they just immediately go up in flame.
Well, of course, that's how that works.
And then, in his panic, as he's engulfed in fire, he's, like, stomping around the cabin, and he knocks over a gasoline can, and the fire gets even worse.
Why is there a gasoline can in your cabin, sir?
Who knows? It's borderline hilarious. Like, they're trying to play it as like, oh my god, what is going... But it's just funny.
Okay.
He eventually, like, stumbles out of the cabin. He's completely engulfed in flames. He's screaming. And he ends up, like, tripping and rolling down a hill into a nearby river.
Oh.
And the kids flee the scene.
Of course they do, damn kids.
Cut to our opening credits and title screen. It's your standard 80s slasher fare. There's just some spooky music playing while names are flashed on the screen. Then we jump 5 years.
Okay.
Cropsy has spent the past 5 years in the hospital. He survived the ordeal, but barely.
Oh.
And we find out, there's even, like, there's a scene of, like, an orderly showing a new doctor, like, if you're gonna survive at this hospital, you gotta see this guy, and if you can stomach him, then you can stomach anything. And it's like, cool, so now Cropsy's this horribly burned man is a freak show. Awesome.
Nice!
But after the 5 years, Cropsy is released, and you get, like, all these voiceovers of the doctors, like, telling him what to do and to be careful, and that his skin grafts apparently did not take, and he's been left horribly disfigured. And there's even one voiceover where a doctor's like, try not to hold any resentment to the kids that did this. They were young and just being stupid.
No!
And no, I'm gonna fucking kick those kids in the teeth.
Yup. Currently rooting for the villain, just so we're clear.
I mean, right off the bat, it's like, no, we're going to get revenge on these kids. But so we don't see his face. The movie doesn't, like, show him except, like, completely bathed in shadow. So Cropsy leaves the hospital, and I guess they, like, gave him in, like, clothing to wear because he has an overcoat and a hat to cover his face.
Oh.
And he ventures out into the city at night. Just, I guess, he doesn't have anywhere to go, apparently. So they're just like, good luck. And they just send him out.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
He ends up wandering to the red light district and finding a prostitute who takes him back up to her apartment. I guess she didn't ask for money first because he clearly wouldn't have any money.
Oh, yeah.
They go into her room. He turns off the lights, which she thinks is just like a thing for him. But there's like a flash of lightning and she ends up seeing his face and is horrified and tells him to get out. So he just snaps in that moment and begins choking her with his bare hands. They're struggling. She goes to reach for a pair of scissors on the vanity next to her to defend herself, but he grabs them out of her hand and guts her with them and just leaves her to die in the apartment.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Just, he's just killing people now. Just random people. So then the movie jumps to summer camp again. But here's the thing. Here's the first warning sign that this movie gave off for me. Cropsy does not return to the summer camp where the bad thing happened to him.
What?
He goes to another camp altogether called Camp Stonewater.
No, no. No, 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 no.
I'm going to get revenge on whoever find.
What the heck?
Like, at least it makes sense. Like, Jason, yeah, he doesn't kill any of the people that did anything to him or his mom, but it's like he's defending his territory.
Right.
Like, if you go to Camp Crystal Lake, he's gonna kill you because he doesn't want anyone else coming there. But this guy is just like, fuck these random people over here who never did anything bad to me.
Fuck summer camps in general.
And we're introduced to our whole cast of characters, like a whole bunch of sexy teenage counselors and Jason Alexander. They're having fun. They're doing summer camp things. This movie's got an interesting casting problem where there's counselors and then there's actually the kids. But whoever cast this movie was just going willy-nilly with, like, what aged actor got put into what role.
Oh, no.
Because some of the kids have, like, 5 o'clock shadows, and some of the counselors look like they could be the ones playing young teenagers in other slasher films.
Oh, no.
It's very mixed bag, and it took me a while to, like, orient myself as to who was who in this movie.
Great.
So we get our first sense of danger when, like, a bunch of kids are playing, like, baseball out in a field, and one girl runs into the trees to fetch a stray ball, and we get the whole, like, POV shot from the killer's point of view, stalking her in the bushes. And we see that he's armed with these, like, gigantic garden shears, but the girl leaves before he can make the first kill.
So we're just being creepy now. Cool.
Yeah, just going right into it. And I love, like, the movie, like, it goes to all this effort, like, you don't see his face or anything, but it's like, you know it's Cropsey, but it kind of acts like it's trying to be mysterious about it, but I'm like, but it's Cropsey, like, why even, just show him to us, don't do the POV thing. Which I'm gonna just attribute to their, like, that Halloween movie was really successful, let's just do everything that did. Later on, we cut to everyone's in the mess hall having lunch, and our two female leads are talking about guys, because that's all female characters are allowed to do in 80s movies.
Of course, that's all we do anyway. It's fine.
And these two girls are counselors, and it's Michelle and Karen. Now, Karen is talking about her on-off boyfriend, Eddie, and how he scares her sometimes.
What?
Like, physically.
No.
To the point where there's an upcoming overnight camping trip where everyone's going to be, like, put into different groups. And she's like, I don't want to be in his group because I won't feel safe.
Okay, why is he still your boyfriend? On again, off again, whatever.
And on top of that, her friend Michelle's only advice is, well, if you like him, you got to make the relationship work.
No.
Yeah, it's bad.
Lord.
Like, it's one thing to have just, like, dumb, like, cheap, cheesy 80s movie, like, dialogue, but this girl outright is like, he scares me sometimes. He gets really mad. And I'm like, you're being abused.
Yep. Goodness gracious. Just make it work. It's fine.
Yeah, so that's just, they're just like, well, boys will be boys, ha. Huh? So, yeah, that's that. The next morning, one of the girls, I think it's one of the counselors, goes to the showers. Surprisingly modest scene. No boobs, nothing.
Wow, I was expecting quite a thing after that stupid conversation.
I know, it really threw me. I'm just like, am I watching an edited version of this movie? How did the filmmakers resist? But she gets spooked by the noise of someone walking around outside, and then it, like, cuts away and you just hear her scream. And everybody comes running to see what's going on, and they find her crying because one of the kids at the camp, Alfred, was peeping on her and scared her.
Gross.
Alfred, I'm going to point out, is one of those, he's supposed to be one of the kids at the camp, but he is clearly a man who's at least 25 or 26 years old.
More but
gross. They write and play him like he's supposed to be, like, 14.
Oh, no.
It's so weird.
Oh, no.
So, Michelle is yelling at him and saying he's, like, a creep and stuff. But then we get our male lead, the head counselor, Todd, who's like, you know, just be cool, Michelle. Like, I'll talk to him. If he's a problem, then I'll deal with it. And it's like, no, dude, he's a problem. He did a bad thing.
That might be one of my favorite voices you have ever done for a male lead. God.
I really gotta emphasize how ridiculous this movie is.
Oh, beautiful. Okay.
So, Todd takes Alfred aside. They go to, like, one of the cabins, and he's, like, talking to him. He's like, why you gotta be like this, man? You're gonna get in so much trouble, you'll get kicked out of here. And he's, like, yelling at him, but he's also kind of being, like, supportive and trying to, like, straighten him out. And basically, like, offers to be, like, a shoulder to cry on if that's what Alfred needs. Because in the beginning of the, like, the end of this movie is Alfred rants to Todd about how he didn't even want to come to summer camp, but his parents made him. He hates it being here. He has no friends, and everyone picks on him, and boo-hoo-hoo, everyone pity Alfred.
Maybe if he didn't go creep on your counselors taking a shower, people would talk to you and wouldn't make fun of you.
Well, good, so sir. Here's the thing. I need you to remember this rant and this boo-hoo sentiment, because as the movie goes on, you can clearly tell that the writers were bad at their jobs.
Great. Okay.
But before we get there, so they have their talk. Alfred goes to leave, and outside the cabin, he gets grabbed and harassed by this guy who goes by the name Glazer.
Glazer?
I'm going to assume that's his last name, Glazer.
He sounds like the machine that's used to glaze donuts.
Yeah. He's got about the same intelligence level, so cool. That works. But this guy, Glazer, is he's like got the hots for the girl that Alfred was peeping on. So he like grabs him. He's like, you go near her again, I'm gonna kick your ass. And of course, Todd immediately shows up out of nowhere, pushes Glazer, and he's like, leave him alone, man. He's a good kid. He just did a bad thing. I'm like, fuck this movie for defending the sex pest.
God. Okay.
Also, keep Glazer in mind for later, and think back to him being the dude who's like, don't be weird with women, because that comes full circle.
Well, yeah.
So, next, it's a scene of all the boys and girls are swimming in the lake, they're playing, they're having fun, everyone's having a good time. And this is when the writing falls apart, because you immediately are shown a group of guys who are walking with Alfred and are being, like, the best of friends to him.
Wow, friends, people talking to you.
Yeah, they're like, come swimming with us, come have fun, we're gonna introduce you to some girls, it's gonna be great. And Alfred's like, oh, I don't, like, he doesn't want to go swimming because he can't really swim. And they're like, that's cool, you can just hang out with us, that's totally fun. Like, they're being so fucking supportive, and I'm like, Alfred, you little shit, you said you had no friends.
That's a little too supportive for a slasher movie, I'm not gonna lie.
I know, right? And of course, like, they're hanging out by the dock, and Glazer shows up, sneaks up behind Alfred, and pushes him into the water. And everyone immediately comes to his defense. Everyone's like, Glazer, you piece of shit. Alfred's cool. Don't bully him anymore. Okay. And I'm like, this movie is putting so much effort into defending the peeping Tom.
Yep.
And then, immediately after that, Glazer walks away and he's like flirting with a bunch of girls who are hanging out on one of those like raft platforms on the water. And the guys, they pick Alfred up. They're like, we're going to help you get revenge on Glazer. And they like get a pellet gun and they snipe Glazer in the ass when he's in front of the girls, like embarrassing him. And then they all moon him and they like run away and they're like, yeah, we did it. And like, it's Alfred and his gang of dudes. Like, this guy is the most popular kid there.
So,
and then when Glazer's yelling at all of them, one of the girls pushes him into the lake, and it's hilarious.
Okay, see, Glazer does sound like an asshole, so I'm okay with that scene, actually.
It is pretty fun. Oh, I'm going to say this now. I didn't know where I was going to point this out, but I figure I'll just do it now anyway. Because the girl that pushes Glazer into the lake,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to respectfully say she is a plus-size girl. Which is fine. That's awesome. I love it. This movie from 1981, which was written by Harvey Weinstein, at no point in the movie is this girl, like, made fun of or anything about her weight.
Good for you, Harvey.
I was like, what is happening here? How, like, I would, the whole time, when as soon as that girl showed up on screen, I'm like, great, I'm gonna have to sit through, like, 8 fat jokes in this movie, and it's all gonna be, like, stupid and horrible and, like, offensive. No, not once. Nobody ever, like, this girl's just one of the gang, and I'm like, who, what, did a time traveler show up and, like, do edits on this script?
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I loved it. I'm like, that's amazing. There needs to be more of that in this movie. So, later that night, the guys are hanging out in their cabin, and they're sharing porn magazines with each other, because that's what you did.
Gross.
We get a POV shot of somebody sneaking up to the cabin. Alfred sees a face at the window and is like, oh my god, what is that? But when everybody turns to look, there's nothing there.
Oh, I wonder who it was.
Yeah. Todd shows up to tell them all to get to the mess hall for dinner, so that's where we go. There, Glazer gets all roid ragey, and Jason Alexander's flirting with the girls, and I don't know what universe I'm living in anymore. Because, like, they have... Because Jason Alexander is Jason Alexander. He's always been sort of a stocky, short dude. But, like, he's killing it with these girls. And I'm like, yeah, no, this kind of makes sense. Because Harvey Weinstein. But there's a really funny moment where one of the guys, whose name is... who goes by Woodstock. Once again, I'm going to assume that's a nickname or his last name.
Oh, boy.
Is like, oh, I forgot my vitamins. I need to go back and get my vitamins. And one of the other guys is like, you don't believe in that crap, do you? And I'm like, vitamins were a urban legend at one point? Were they like fae creatures? What is this? So Woodstock leaves to go get his vitamins back at the cabin. Perfect setup. somebody's gonna die, I bet.
Of course.
He gets to his little cabin. The lights don't turn on. We've seen this all before. He grabs a flashlight. He's looking around. A figure stalks into the cabin, but it just turns out to be Todd.
Oh, hey, Todd.
It's a false scare. It's such a letdown. And it's literally because, like, I guess, like, Glazer was like, Alfred looked, or Woodstock looked really sick. You better go check on him. And I'm like, and that, I guess, was the extent of the joke. But, like, Todd gets back and he's like, Glazer, you pull a stunt like that again and you're out of here. And I'm like, pull what stunt?
Pull what?
He just lied to you about a mundane thing. Like, it's whatever. So the end of that scene is the dude who, like, runs the camp, I guess. They don't spend any time with this guy. I don't even know his name. But he's, like, discussing the next day's canoe trip and overnight camping thing and blah, 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 blah. So we cut to the next day and hijinks and laughs are being had on the lake because they're all on their canoes and they're splashing each other and trying to tip each other over. And it's a good time. That night, around a campfire, Todd tells the tale of Camp Blackfoot, a nearby camp which burned down some years ago. He talks about the evil caretaker named Cropsy, who was a sadistic drunk. He even tells about a prank gone wrong, from which we saw at the start of the movie. He then says the body was never found, and he lives in these woods to this day, eating whatever he can catch. And then Eddie, remember the abusive boyfriend we talked about earlier?
Yes.
Jumps out wearing a mask and wielding a machete and scares everyone, and oh, we're having a good time.
Why is it always a machete?
I don't know. That's also a weirdly, I'm like, hey, that was some foresight on their part, because not too long afterwards, Jason would be killing people with a machete.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Not as much as we thought.
No.
We then cut to Eddie and Karen walking in the woods, talking. Karen wants to make sure that their relationship is real. Eddie wants to bang.
Karen should be stopping the relationship, but okay.
Yep. So Eddie's like, hey, I got a good idea. Let's go skinny dipping. And with very little effort, convinces her to join him.
Cool.
And this is where the nudity is.
Oh, I was wondering where it was.
Yeah, they had me in the first half, but nope, here it comes. And so they get in the water. Eddie is immediately aggressive and just starts, like, pawing all over her and, like, trying to make out with her and stuff. And she keeps saying no and, like, pushing him away and stuff. And eventually he gets fed up and basically, like, swats at her, like, almost backhands her and tells her to get out of his face. So she goes back to the shore.
What an asshole!
She swims back to the shore and sees that her clothes are missing.
Of course they are.
So she goes wandering into the woods to find them. She thinks somebody's pulling a prank. And she finds them, like, left in a trail hanging from branches. And when she gets to the last article of clothing, Cropsy jumps out from the shadows, grabs her, and slits her throat with his giant garden shears.
Okay, the build-up was kind of creative. I liked that.
Yeah, a little bit.
However,
I'm kind of disappointed that Eddie wasn't the one killed after that interaction.
Right, see, I would have been like, my clothes are gone, you're an asshole, I'm taking your clothes instead.
Right, that would have made more sense. So the next morning, Todd and Michelle are questioning Eddie about Karen's whereabouts because she didn't come back to where they had all their sleeping bags set up and everything. And he's like, I don't know nothing. Michelle is suspicious that Eddie hurt her. Todd is, of course, like, take it easy, babe. I'm sure it's fine. Because...
Jesus.
Yeah, this whole movie. They're then alerted by some of the kids that all of the canoes are gone.
Good.
And the movie only now establishes that this is a problem because I guess they canoed to the opposite end of the lake, and where they are is apparently so thickly... The brush is so thickly dense around them that they can't just walk back to camp.
Oh, no.
So everyone gathers. They're trying to figure out what happened to the canoes. I believe at one point, like, somebody's like, maybe fucking Karen, after she got mad at Eddie, took one, but then, like, left all the rest of them untied and they drifted off. And I'm like, oh, yeah, on the current in the lake.
Also, like, can you not see the whole lake?
No, I guess they're in the little, like, inlet that's secluded or some stupid shit. Whatever. I mean, it's not like Camp Crystal Lake makes any more sense in one of the movies. Camp Crystal Lake leads out into the fucking Atlantic Ocean,
yes,
so
it
there's
does.
That. So Glazer accuses Alfred of having done something to the canoes and or Karen. Actually, I don't think he accuses him of doing anything to Karen. I think he only gives a shit about the canoes. But once again, everyone defends Alfred.
What the hell?
He has all of the friends! So the group decides to all split up, go look for evidence of the canoes, and if that's no good, they're going to start gathering supplies and wood to build a raft.
Okay.
Which is, like, Todd gives the order for that plan, and then the movie, I think unintentionally, hilariously smash cuts to Todd and Michelle sitting on a rock, talking, and not doing anything productive. Oh, good job, Todd. Lead by example.
Yep. Good job. Good, good. Don't worry, man.
Pretty much. That's his whole character. So we then jump to Glazer and Sally are looking for wood, and it's basically an exact repeat of the scene we just saw with Eddie and Karen, where Glazer's like, well, I'm bored. Time to have sex.
That's how you solve all boredom, of course.
Yeah. Except this scene goes a little differently, where she resists, she resists, she resists, and then suddenly she's like, okay, let's have sex.
Well, that's still... okay.
Yep. And then guess what happens?
Somebody dies.
No, Alfred is watching them.
Oh, God damn it, Alfred!
It just keeps happening. Back at the group, a raft has been made, and a chunk of the group is sent off on it to go get help while the rest stay behind. I think it's like 4 or 5 of them are on this. It's a pretty decently sized raft. I was impressed. A while later, we see the raft group spots one of the canoes floating on the lake. They paddle over to it, and right as they reach it, Cropsy pops out and proceeds to go on a full-on rampage and massacre the entire group of these kids on this raft.
Oh, my.
Yeah, including swiping off one of Eddie's, like, feet and then impaling his throat.
Oh!
Yay, Eddie's dead.
Holy moly.
One girl gets her fucking head slit open.
Oh!
And at one point, Woodstock gets his, like, fingers sheared off, and then he gets stabbed to death.
Now, what is the point of taking off his fingers before... okay.
It was just, like, he's just swiping them randomly and happened to get them.
Got it.
It's a pretty, like, rage-induced attack. But yeah, like, 4 or 5 kids just takes him out in, like, 12 seconds.
Cool.
It's actually the most impressive scene in the movie. So we cut back to Todd and Michelle are being cute in the forest and getting all kissy-kissy. And they go away to have some private time. Whatever. But unfortunately, the movie cuts back to Glazer and Sally having very awkward sex, where it sounds like... it sounds like she's just uncomfortable and not, like, she's, like, not having a great time. And then Glazer finishes prematurely.
Yeah, that tracks with Glazer.
I'm going to remind everyone listening right now, this is a movie written by Harvey Weinstein. It makes total sense now. So Glazer gets up to sneak back to camp and get matches so they can start a fire and try again later. I am so glad this movie spends so much time on this.
Try again later.
Yeah.
Key.
Fortunately for us, as soon as he leaves, Cropsy jumps out and stabs Sally in the chest with his shears and kills her.
Brilliant. No trying again later.
Yeah. Back at the main, like, camp area where all the tents and sleeping bags are, Alfred is not sleeping, and he spots Glazer show up and steal the matches and follows him back into the woods. Glazer returns, finds Sally's dead body, and is immediately stabbed in the throat by the killer and lifted bodily off the ground and slammed into a tree.
Ooh. Okay.
Alfred sees all this and flees back to camp. Because he just peeps. That's his entire character.
He needs something else.
Alfred wakes up Todd and tells him that Glazer is dead, but Todd doesn't believe him. Alfred leads him back into the woods, and they find the body. Todd is immediately sneak attacked by the killer, who, for some reason, just knocks him unconscious and doesn't do anything else, and Alfred flees again.
Okay.
Meanwhile, The remaining group spots the raft floating on the water, with apparently no one on it, and they think that the raft group is playing a prank for some reason.
Hang on, didn't Alfred have to go wake up Todd?
Well, this is, like, a little bit, like, it's playing with time here, but, like, the sun has come up, and everyone else wakes up and is just like, hey, a raft, before they can realize that, like, Todd and Alfred are gone.
Nobody realized that it's been, like, a whole night and the raft group didn't fucking come back?
Well, except, I mean, not until they spot the raft now, and they're like, they're playing a prank, and I'm like, what is this prank? I don't get what the prank is.
But, like, you're responsible for kids, and you should have known that they didn't, okay, fine.
Well, it gets better. So Michelle swims out to the raft, and she finds all the dead bodies.
Oh, good.
Which are just lying on it. Todd reunites with the group at that moment, and everyone's freaking out, and Todd's like, I gotta go save Alfred.
Yep.
And he picks up an axe, like a wood-cutting axe, and he instructs the rest of the group to get on the raft, get back to camp, and get help. Which, if I'm any of the kids in that group, I'm gonna be like, fuck you, the last group that tried to do that all died.
Yeah, right?
Why don't we all go kill the killer together as a group? But Todd's got to be the dude bro and go fucking save Alfred by himself for some reason because, I don't know, fuck Alfred.
Yeah.
So the killer is stalking Alfred through the woods and Todd is in pursuit behind them. They end up at the ruins of some old stone building. Wikipedia describes this as a mine shaft, but I'm like, this is... There's no mine, there's no shaft, it's just a building. It's like the foundation and some walls left standing of a building.
Okay.
Whatever. Alfred jumps in there, tries to hide. The killer finds him anyway, though, grabs him, drags him into an enclosed room, and pins him to the wall with the shears by, like, shoving them into his arm.
Oh.
Todd hears the screams, comes running, he searches around. Here's where it mysteriously becomes a mine shaft, though, because he almost gets crushed by a mine cart that was rolled towards him. So, I guess this was the facility above a mine?
Okay.
But I'm still adamant that you never actually see a mine in this movie.
Mine-adjacent building.
Yeah. There we go. Then the movie just fucking goes completely bonkers because Cropsy shows up wielding a flamethrower out of nowhere.
The hell?
I don't know where it came from. I don't know how he's, like, what it's fueled with, how he's, like, whatever. But here's the stupid thing. Like, it's him stalking around this area, just, like, blasting flame every now and then. And, like, Todd can see, like, through the cracks in the walls, like, him moving around, but they're not, like, in the actual same room.
Okay.
And we randomly just get a flashback all of a sudden to the opening scene of the movie. And it's revealed that Todd was one of those kids that pranked Cropsy all those years ago.
Of course.
Yeah. So then the writing does what it does again, and all of a sudden Cropsy turns off the flamethrower and just disappears and hides.
Oh, okay, bye.
Todd hears Alfred crying out in pain, goes to find him. The killer is there and attacks. And we finally see his, like, basically melted face. That's just the best way I can describe it. I'm sure you're looking at images.
I am.
Todd squares off with Cropsy, almost immediately loses. Like, he does not put up a fight at all. The axe does not come into play. Like, he gets knocked down immediately. And Cropsy is about to cook him with the flamethrower when Alfred is able to free himself and stabs Cropsy in the back with his own shears.
Ooh!
Yeah. He falls down, Todd grabs Alfred, they go to, like, limp out of there in victory, but they're jumped by a still-alive Cropsy. And they immediately put him back down because, like, they shove him, Todd picks up the axe, slams it into Cropsy's head, and then Alfred grabs the flamethrower and burns Cropsy to death for good this time.
Oh.
They leave and are immediately reunited with Michelle, who has arrived at the police. And I'll actually give the movie credit for this. The end scene, it cuts to, like, more campers and counselors sitting around a fire, telling the story of how Cropsy still lives in the woods, a monster, no longer human. And it basically just, like, calls back to the earlier scene of the campfire story, and ends with, like, the thing that Todd said before, where he's just like, I forget his little, like, fucking mantra he says, but he's like, you know, look out, beware, he's coming for you, or some shit like that. And then it just, like, cuts to credits after that.
Okay.
And that's The Burning.
All right. Okay. I mean, sure.
Yeah.
That could have been worse.
I mean, it's I honestly feel like I probably made it sound better in describing it. It's just not a well-made movie, so when you get the visuals too, it's kind of, like, disappointing.
Oh.
The way I put in my notes how I describe this movie is, this movie is what every parody of Friday the 13th is actually parodying. It looks and feels way cheaper than a Friday movie, and is filled with nothing burger characters, and throws out tits and gores without any gravitas.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my summation of this movie.
So not good is what you're going with. Not good?
Yes, that'll be what I'm saying.
Okay.
So what did you think?
I mean it's basically Jason, but fire.
Yeah. They somehow ripped off a movie that they had written before that movie came out.
I mean, I would probably watch it, because sometimes I like to see how bad things are.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say don't ever watch it. It's just don't expect much. Really, just the most horrifying thing about this movie is when you learn it was made by Harvey Weinstein, and you're just like, that makes so many characters in this movie make sense. Because it's just a series of sexual attacks, one after another.
Yeah, what the heck?
It's like, wow, man, like, the universe was trying to warn us about him all the way back at the start of his career, but nobody heard the call.
Oh, nobody heard anything.
Mm. So, if you're interested in numbers...
I am!
The movie was made on a budget of $1.5 million.
Okay.
What are your guesses? Profit or no, or bomb?
Oh, I really want to say bomb.
You would be correct.
Hooray!
For some reason, Wikipedia specifies, I guess this was not released internationally because it says United States, Canada, but it only made $700,000.
Oh, no.
Didn't even make its budget back.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, I guess, no, I'm sorry. According to the notes down below, it did eventually get released overseas, and actually did, like, it did make its money back that way.
But still no profit.
I mean, yeah, I guess it paid for itself, but probably not much else.
Cool.
It says, when it was released in Britain, it was double billed with When a Stranger Calls, which I guess boosted its fortunes.
Oh, okay.
Which I would say is not a great movie, but it's a better movie than this one.
Yeah.
The critical response, however, is what surprised me, and why I guess I'm in the minority, because this movie was actually rated pretty well.
Really?
Yeah. So on Rotten Tomatoes, 73% of critics liked this movie.
Oh!
And it has an audience score of 60%.
Huh.
I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah, that... Huh.
Yeah, right? I honestly would have thought that this was, like, a lesser-known, forgettable, like, you know. I mean, because that's what it is. It's just, like, it's a lesser slasher film.
I mean, you did say that it had a cult following.
I guess that's what I'm seeing here, is the people who just really love this movie. Yeah, it's bizarre. But some of the responses are pretty interesting. I always love when I see, like, a trashy, cheesy movie like this, and it's like, Robert Ebert watched this film, and I'm like, oh god, what did he have to say? It says, Ebert was particularly unimpressed by the film's similarity to Friday the 13th Part 2, another slasher from the summer of 1981 that he despised.
Lovely.
Some of the quotes from Rotten Tomatoes are... I love this one. A stylish thriller that generally fares better than the majority of similarly themed horror endeavors. I do not feel that I watched the same movie as this person. What was stylish in this film?
I mean, it's not like the POV shots were new or anything.
Yeah, like they'd already been done before. This one feels closer to my feelings. a reviewer named Mike Massey wrote, "For every effective brutality, there's an equivalently unsuccessful bit of editing, acting, a musical riff, or interchange, which numbs the execution."
Oh.
This one as well I agree with. At a time when the subgenre was undergoing a boom and the market was saturated, The Burning does little to distinguish itself from the spate of other slashers with which it was vying for screen space.
Okay.
That one I think is the most accurate. It's just a very generic bare-bones camp slasher film.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even do anything exciting with the, like, he just stabs people with the shears over and over again. At least Jason was just like, hey, what's in my environment? What can I kill the children with today?
Yeah, right?
This dude, see, it's like we talked about with the Jason and the machete thing. This movie is what people think the Friday movies are.
Yes.
The killer whose face you don't see stalks dumb, poorly written camp characters and kills them over and over again with the one signature weapon. That's this movie. That's not Friday the 13th.
Okay, everybody, you heard it here. Not Friday the 13th.
I will die on this hill.
Will you die by Cropsy on this hill?
No, I think I could take him. He didn't move very fast.
Just, you know, if your clothes go missing, maybe don't follow them into the woods.
No, I'm just going to run in the opposite direction.
And that is what I learned.
That's the lesson we're pulling from this.
There's lots of lessons, but that's one
that's,
of them.
That's a very specific situation.
Maybe don't prank people with fire.
Yeah, I'd say that's the more important lesson. If you're going to prank someone, which I'm not, I've never been interested in pranks ever. Don't do anything that could get you arrested for arson.
Yeah. Also, if you're at a summer camp and you are able to find a skull, maybe don't go to that summer camp.
Go anywhere else. That's some poltergeist shit right there. You moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies! Man, where did they get that skull? That's what I'm interested about. Alright, I'm gonna 1-2 punch this. First, what's in a name? The Burning.
Ooh.
I say that sounds like a title to, like, a trashy romance novel with Fabio on the cover. The Burning. I mean, I guess it is thematically kind of fitting because this all kicks off with a dude getting burnt, but I kind of feel like there should have been more burning going on then.
Right, his method of killing people should have been with the flamethrower the whole time, and then The Burning would have been a better title. It would have fit better.
Yeah.
Why didn't...
It would have made a lot more sense.
Why didn't they just name it Cropsy?
I know, right? Like, they went to all this effort to, like, borrow from an actual urban legend type of thing that people knew about, and they're just like, The Burning.
Or, like, camp, whatever the second camp was.
Stonefoot or whatever it is.
Yeah. Like, what?
I don't know, man. The writers on this weren't super concentrated on making things make sense.
I got that impression.
I just gotta say, I'm distracted right now because I'm looking at images, and Wikipedia has a image of the cover of, like, the official soundtrack of the movie, and it is the funniest goddamn image I have ever seen in my life, because it's just, like, Rick Wakeman at the top in letters, which I guess was the composer. A weird, like, V cut in the white background with, like, flames behind it. And then it says The Burning underneath that. And in the foreground, in one corner is Alfred just running. And in the opposite back corner is a little shadowy Cropsy following behind him.
Like I...
But it's just... It's just on a white background, so they're just like, whoa!
I see what they were trying to do, but,
it's so random. What were they going for here? All right, though, but getting back on back on track, how do we remake this movie, Sarah? How do we make this better?
Oh, we need a whole new cast of characters.
Yeah, less sexual assault.
You know,
right off the bat.
Scrap it and just make it Friday the 13th. Just forget it.
If we add That's a no. That's the easy way out. We can't do that. I know that's the obvious answer is just make Friday the 13th, but we can do something with Cropsey, the horribly burned man. You know what? It probably would have been a better start if he had actually gone to get revenge on the fucking people who hurt him.
Yes.
Instead of just random other kids and, oops, coincidentally, one of the people who pranked him.
Like, even if they had given us a small scene during the 5 years while he was in the hospital of them, like, him, like, tracking their whereabouts so that he knew that Todd was one of the kids, like, that would have, just that little detail would have been a lot.
Yeah, would have done it. I mean, like, as of the movie itself, he has no character. Like, you never hear him speak. And you get, like, 2 seconds of him before he's horribly burned, and that's just, like, him waking up and then being on fire. And you don't actually see any of the bad things he does. Like, it's just people being like, he was an ass to me one time. And I'm like, great, cool. Does he have hobbies? Like, does he have anything else going on?
So we need an actual backstory, and then the prank gone wrong, and then some footage of while he's in the hospital, and then a whole new cast of kids.
I would rather he, like, plotted his revenge, not just sort of stumbled into it.
Actual kids. People playing their age. Ish.
I mean, this is Hollywood. That's never gonna happen.
I said ish.
And if we absolutely must have, like, the asshole character who's always, like, terrible to women, have them be the person we cheer on getting murdered.
Yes.
Not have that person survive the whole movie.
Ugh.
This is a weird one. There's no final girl in this movie. Michelle lives, but that's just because she kind of leaves the plot halfway through.
Well, good for her.
It's Alfred and Todd are like the final dudes. I don't like
that. No.
I think, because the movie spends a lot of time building up, like, as much as their relationship in a realistic sense is, like, terrible, Todd and Michelle are kind of like this team. Like, they're a couple, and they work together to solve problems. That would have been a cool way to end it, with the two of them tag-teaming Cropsey and, like, creatively taking him down.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of just, like, I guess we got lucky and hit him in the face with an axe.
I understand having to have, like, the out-there characters and, like, extreme one way or the other, because otherwise it gets boring, I guess. But, like, could we... I don't know. I didn't mind Todd's character. I didn't mind the, it's okay, man. What, like, I didn't mind it.
I mean, yeah, he's not any worse than your typical, like, old-fashionedly written male lead characters. It's just, like, annoying how he keeps defending Alfred the whole movie.
Right, and I understand if we had, like, backstory of, like, oh, he's, like, the neighbor kid, like, I've been looking out for him my whole life kind of thing. Or if he only peeped once and then was like, ah, oh, fuck, I messed up, guys. Like, all right. But, like, you did it multiple times, sir.
Yeah. It's just, the entire thing is just them throwing reasons at you to not like Alfred and then expecting you to cheer his survival at the very end.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Make sense, movie.
We're way too late
we
for that.
We are, I know.
And on that note, I'd say we're just about getting to the end of this episode.
Oh, good.
Did you have a fun April Fool's Day?
Probably not. I was going with no.
God, I don't know how many more years we can keep this up. What other movies can we talk about?
Ooh.
You got any more prank horror movies that I don't know about?
Listeners, if you know any, write in.
Please, tell us. I need something to cover. I mean, I'm willing to talk about April Fool's Day again. That movie is a delight.
Still haven't seen it, Pete. I'm doing a bad job.
Well, you can come over sometime and we'll watch it. I got the Blu-ray.
Brilliant.
But until that time, everybody, be careful at summer camp. Be careful when playing with fire. I mean, don't play with fire. Respect it. And as always, don't get too scared.